Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios on this beautiful day in the city. I am David Haugh, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball like we do every Saturday. This week, wondering if the professor really has tenure with the Cubs and if the White Sox can escape New York with a victory. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, David. Wow, it was a strange baseball day yesterday. Certainly a historic one from a perspective of the game with Paul Skenes doing something to the Cubs that hadn't been done before. And looking like the next, you pick the name out, Roger Clemens, Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor, Steven Strasburg. Certainly one of the more dominant performances for six innings that I've watched since maybe Kerry Wood back in 1998.
Jacob DeGrom is a name that comes to mind. He was the last pitcher to do what Paul Skenes did on Friday, which is strike out the first seven hitters that he faced. Seven Cubs went down to strikeouts. Skenes really was dominant. There's no other way to put it, Bruce. 100 pitches he left without giving up a hit after six innings. I thought this, before we get into what we're going to have today, Bruce, I thought this was surprising. I mentioned DeGrom. That was the other pitcher in Major League history who did retired at least the first seven hitters that he faced. And Jim DeShays was the other one. Jim DeShays in 1986. I did not expect to see Paul Skenes, Jacob DeGrom, and Jim DeShays share this little trivia. But according to the Elias Sports Bureau, those are the three pitchers in Major League history who did what Paul Skenes did on Friday.
Striking out at least seven to start the game. Yeah. And Jim is such a great guy and outstanding broadcaster. One of the more less ego-centric people I've ever met, okay? So you would never know the accomplishments of him as a pitcher. He would say it was extremely modest after that debut, but he had a long career and just a terrific announcer and a great friend.
He's got the longest streak for a rookie pitcher to begin a game in the live ball era since 1920, September 23rd, 1986. That, to me, is the way you should kick off today's Marquee's broadcast. JD, take a bow. Anyway, that was a little surprise. We got a great show today, Bruce. We're going to line up. At the bottom of the hour, Jameson Taillon, the Cubs' starting pitcher, will join us. Jordan Leisure, he's expected to join us in the second hour, the White Sox relief pitcher. Sox out in New York against the Yankees. They lose on Friday night. The Cubs lose again to the Pirates, as you discussed, and you were there. Let's start the conversation, though, Bruce, with what this means to the Cubs' future starting rotation. Kyle Hendricks didn't have it. Seven earned runs. Eight overall, and I think you had hopes that he would be able to continue what he showed last Sunday in Pittsburgh. Wasn't the case. What was the biggest reason in your mind, Bruce, that it didn't happen?
He's not the same pitcher that he used to be. I think it's pretty simple. His mistakes are accentuated by the fact that they hang in the strike zone and they're hit hard, David, and that's the problem. He gives up a lot of contact. As he calls it, soft contact, nonetheless, a lot of contact. And, when you look at Kyle Hendricks after six starts, David, and it's 0-4 with a 10.57 ERA, you know there's something wrong going on. Why don't we talk about Hendricks and what he and counsel, how they looked at it.
So Kyle Hendricks gives up seven runs, but according to him, that wasn't as bad as it looked. He claims that there were only a couple bad pitches that he threw.
Not the results, obviously, but to be honest, I thought I made two bad pitches, which is crazy to look at that start and say that, but I thought the homer and then the Gonzalez double were two bad changeups. Other than that, I mean, I thought I was even better down in the zone. I thought I executed maybe better than my last start. So just bizarre. So many soft hits falling in front. So just got to stick with the process, stick with down in the zone, stick with executing. And hopefully that's got to switch, you know.
He's putting the Cubs in a tough spot, Bruce, which is why you asked Craig Counsell exactly what's next for Kyle Hendricks.
Does he stay in the rotation for them?
I mean, I think we got to look at the start a little closer and see what's going on. You know, we're in a tough stretch right now. I mean, we've got eight pitchers on the injured list. You know, that Kyle's, you know, we've got to keep doing our best to help Kyle turn the corner. And I think that's going to be really important here in the stretch we're in. You know, we're going to need innings.
Bruce, you asked a question. It was the right one. What did you think about the answer and what happens next?
Well, the answer is as honest as he gets. And the subliminal part of the answer was, we are in a tough stretch now. After Monday, they have 13 in a row again. They're still getting pitchers back. Jordan Wicks probably will go out on an assignment this week. So right now, Hendricks has a spot. But it's going to be up to Counsell in about a week, 5 to 7 days, to decide if Hendricks fits in any longer in that rotation. And David, Kyle Hendricks is not a bullpen pitcher.
No.
He's not a guy that you're going to bring out and induce contact with, because it's going to be contact when you're looking for some shutdown innings. He's not going to be able to pitch more than once a week out of a bullpen where he hasn't really pitched and usually needs 30 to 40 pitches to get ready for a start. This is do or die for the career of Kyle Hendricks. He knows it. He alluded to it. Yet he said to Steve Greenberg's question about that, he said, I understand where I'm at, but I can't think about it. I just think about my next start. I think about going out there and winning the next game. I think about all the positivity that came out of this one and how I'm going to take that to the next one. And for a lot of people, it's Pollyannish. For Kyle Hendricks, it's truly believable for a guy who has gotten 10 years out of his career that didn't have the right to be one of the top pitchers in Major League Baseball. So when you're betting against Kyle Hendricks, you might lose. And that's why we all hesitate to say this is near the end for the professor.
So that's all well said, Bruce. And I think everybody respects the difficulty and the conundrum maybe the Cubs are facing with Kyle Hendricks. But I also look at, well, they're 25-20. They're two games back of the Brewers. Nobody's running away with that division. Not yet. Nobody's getting really hot. So the Cubs are treading water. But if they're legitimate contenders, they can't take that chance that you just described. I think they've got to have higher standards, and I think that's what you heard in Craig Counsell, the way he worded what he said in his answer. And I think for the first time on Friday, we started to get a glimpse of what might happen and how awkward it could become if Kyle Hendricks is seeing one thing, and maybe he sees 7 runs, but he only threw 2 bad pitches, and the Cubs are seeing quite another, which might be a well-respected veteran who is going to be one of the more popular all-time Cubs at the end of the line here. And I think that's going to be awkward, because you're going to have to balance the respect that he has earned with the reality that you're a contender and you can't send somebody out every fifth day who's going to be throwing batting practice.
David, Counsell's brought here to win, and as much as he respects Hendricks, he's not going to put him in a game where he feels he's got another pitcher that's better than he is. He's not going to do it, okay? And when he has that choice, that's what we're facing here. And that's the difficult one, because being a World Series winner, a clincher for the National League pennant for the first time in 70 years, on the mound for Game 7 of World Series, that's never going to go away, that type of respect.
Right.
But we're living in 2024 right now, and Kyle knows, just like I know and you know, that this is getting near the end of the line for Kyle Hendricks, if he doesn't have more starts like he had on Sunday. He's not going to have that many more. And again, we have to deal with reality. The harsh reality is the results aren't there. He will not be there.
Does he, though, Bruce? Does he know? Because I think you can look at Kyle Hendricks in the answer. And I, again, this is very difficult to talk about because of all that he has meant to everyone who has been a Cub fan for the last decade. Kyle Hendricks is as classy as they come, but he's also an athlete. And the athletes are always the last to know and the last to acknowledge. I mean,
David, you have to be. You have to be.
You have to be.
Yeah.
But
right. Don't you agree with that? I mean,
yeah, I do agree with that. But
Jake Arrieta, when he was airing me out and other people at the end of his career.
I remember that, too. That was great. I mean, not great because he's airing me out, but it was good.
But
it was
I didn't take it personally because he was the last to know he had nothing left. It was my job to report what I see and what I know. And by asking him on a interview if he sees the end and this is getting close, the athlete that made him great for so long pushes away the negativity of others and just fights to the death with the idea that he's going to turn this around and do something that very few other people were ever able to do, dominate like he did. And the same thing goes for Hendricks. He must push all the negative talk, anything that can bring you down that rabbit hole from Bruce Levine or Steve Greenberg or Sahadev or any of the group of us reporters, and deal with a mental skills person, a positivity person, people in his area. And I believe me when I say Hendricks is taking advantage of all these positivity things to keep himself out there and motivated to go out there and regain all the skills that he's had in the past.
I know he's got to do that. He's got to be the last to acknowledge that his career might be over. And I think you want that kind of competitor, and that's what's made him a guy that has lasted as long as he has lasted with the stuff that he has. He's been a thinking man's pitcher, and he knows, though, Bruce, he's just got to put up what I would think is a brave front. But let's look at this pragmatically. Let's look at this practically speaking. You mentioned Jordan Wicks. When does he come back, and what do you do with him? What about Hayden Wesneski? Is this a bullpen really the best role for him? Then you got Ben Brown, who everyone wants to project as a closer. But Craig Counsell's looking at this and the puzzle that he's trying to piece together. Nine pitchers for the Cubs have been on the injured list this year. You don't have the luxury of saying, well, you know what, we'll just kind of hide him at the back and let him have mop-up duty. This is a crisis, and I think that you've got to look at it that way. There's got to be some urgency, even though it is only May 18th.
Yeah, the urgency isn't necessarily in starting pitching, David. Starting pitching has been among the best in baseball. They got an ERA of a little over 3, which is second best in the National League, fifth in baseball. The starting pitching has been king for the Chicago Cubs. The hitting is where you're really hurting right now. I mean, you have so many guys, you know, that are banged up. You have Horner banged up. You have Swanson banged up. You have catchers that haven't produced all year. You have Happ that has gone through another horrible time in his career. You have Michael Tauchman, who's been the star of the team. And with all due respect, he is, that's a great story, and he's a great, great guy to talk about. But if he's the star of your team right now, you know that he's not going to be able to do it by himself, and that you have a lot of help that you need on that offense. David, you know, they've been shut down totally offensively a lot over the last 10 days or so, and a lot of it has to do with attrition.
Since Dylan Cease shut them down, they have not been a team that has responded well to velocity. They faced a lot of it since that point. It's almost like that was the beginning of this skid where the bats have been silent and there have been injuries. And I wonder what you think about Nico Horner and how that's been handled, Bruce. Dansby Swanson, certainly they reacted to the injured list and they put him there maybe a little bit long. They waited a little bit longer than they should have. We can always second guess. How about Nico Horner? He's been out now with a hamstring injury. When is he coming back, and how healthy will he be? Should they have been proactive in maybe bringing up somebody from Iowa that could help this team, because that's a position that's a spot that they haven't been able to utilize.
You know, on the marquee broadcast, Taylor McGregor, who does such a great job, pointed out, and he had the cameras focus on the fact that Nico was on the bench yesterday in spikes. And what does that mean? Well, to the common viewer who doesn't watch games all that much, doesn't mean anything. But if you're wearing spikes, it means you're ready to go in if the manager needs you. Okay? Okay. It's that little league, Bruce.
I respected that, too. He had his glove on there.
My point is,
if he's not healthy, today, he's not healthy.
He's either today he plays or he goes on the IL. They can't deal without. I asked counsel in the pregame, how long can you go with just 25 guys? You know, you need that extra guy. He said not much longer. So I think today's the day. He's either in the lineup or he's on the IL.
I hope so, because I feel like the Cubs have been dealing with injuries and attrition as much as any team, and Nico Hoerner is one of the easiest guys in that clubhouse to respect. And the fact that he's ready and he watches games, he's not playing with his glove and spikes, that's great because he's engaged and locked in. But I do think that that's one bat you can't use if it's off the bench. That's one guy that is out of the mix. And for a team that is, you know, struggling right now, they lose two in a row to the Pirates. I mean, you're struggling right now, that they all hands on deck. And that means that you got to make some tough decisions, whether it's regarding Kyle Hendricks in the rotation or Nico Hoerner on the injured list. These are the decisions that Craig Counsell was brought here to make, and they're tough ones, and they're organizational ones, but they're ones that need to be made.
David, you know, we talked about the offense, but the defense has been struggling as well.
Oh, God, no.
You know, and again, you don't expect all bench players to play every day and be able to give you gold glove defense like you have from Swanson and from Hoerner. That's unrealistic. But, you know, Thursday night's game, three runs could be attributed to plays that should have been made that weren't made by the defense. Okay? That's, you know, those are things your counsel was upset about that game. You know, Justin Steele, you know, had a lot of runs scored against him, but they weren't necessarily in the mind of the manager or earn runs. He felt that, you know, he pitched a lot better than his line was, and that the defense just didn't do their job against him.
You mentioned Justin Steele, and I wonder what we're watching in terms of his first two starts since injuring his hamstring on opening night, Bruce. I wonder, giving up five home runs this season, he hasn't looked like the same guy. I wonder what you see, what you're hearing in terms of his conditioning, in terms of maybe just some bad luck. But why has Justin Steele, in his first two starts, not looked like the ace of the staff, more like a guy who's still rounding into shape?
That's exactly what he is, David. You identified it. He's not there yet, okay? This is just post-spring training number two for Steele, okay? He's out a month, comes back, has a couple rehab starts, just not quite there yet. I still have a lot of faith in that this guy is going to be one of the top pitchers in the National League again. Is he going to give up home runs? Yeah, he's going to give up some home runs. But like all the good ones, you hope the home runs are solo blasts. You hope they're earlier in the game and that, you know, he's still the solid 6 to 7 inning pitcher that he was in 2023. So I'm not giving up on him. I'm giving him the idea that I'm giving into the idea that he's still a very good pitcher that hasn't rounded into total shape yet. He was very positive coming out of the game the other night, and I like seeing that because he's a kind of a quiet guy, but he's evolving into a guy that is able to express himself in public more comfortably. And he felt that he was on the right road after that start.
It's really something, Bruce. We're talking about the Cubs, and in the first segment here, we're mentioning Kyle Hendricks and the decline that is obvious. We're talking about the struggles of Justin Steele, who came in the season as the ace. And where would they be without Javier Assad, who is, in his first nine starts, been lights out in elite? And where would they be without today's starter, Shota Imanaga, who has been one of the best pitchers in baseball? The guys who maybe you have counted on in the past haven't been there for the Cubs, and the guys who have really carried and made this rotation as good as it is are guys that may be mild surprises. With Assad and Imanaga, that tandem has been as good as any 1-2 punch in baseball.
So you look at Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins, and you tip a hat saying they have worked hard to create depth in their starting pitching and in their pitching staff in general. And then you look at Council and his use of the team, but also tip your hat to a guy who doesn't get enough credit and is a regular contributor on the Score, Tommy Hotovy. Okay, he is rounding into what I would consider to be one of the top pitching coaches in the National League. And that is, when a guy comes to Chicago and he's good, or had been good and isn't any longer, they get better. That is always an indication of a pitching lab these days, but more importantly, a pitching coach. And Tommy has to get his due. The people are coming here, they're getting better, or they're living up to their ability to go out there and pitch top brand baseball. And at the bottom of the hour here, David, we'll talk to one of those pitchers.
That's great. We're going to talk to Jameson Taillon at the bottom of the hour. Before we get to a break, Bruce, let's squeeze in a quick phone call. Paul is in Valpo. Paul, welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you this morning?
Hey, good morning, fellas. Yeah, guys, you bring up, there's obviously a lot of problems. You know, they're lucky to be where they're at as far as being two games back, but the defense really sticks out. And I know they've had some injuries lately with Horner and Swanson, but guys, this may be premature, but to wonder they sign the wrong guys. I mean, these guys bring nothing to the club offensively. I mean, there's no power. There's no on base, really. Even Hep's on base percentages went down because he just can't hit. So if they can't play defense, where's their value?
It's a good question, Paul. I think when you look at the Cubs defensively, they always consider that, Bruce, a strength. They haven't been as consistent from Dansby Swanson before the injured list stint to when you look at right field, Seiya Suzuki misplayed a ball the other night badly. So everyone can talk about Michael Bush and Christopher Morel at the corners, but some of the guys they have counted on have not been real sharp defensively.
Right. And what are we talking about? We're talking about guys coming back from injuries who aren't quite the guys that we expect them to be right now. Okay. And what did Council do? Any good manager would do. He saw the legs weren't under his right fielder the other night. Mm-hmm. The next day he has him DHing. Okay. Let's give him stronger. He's not going into the doghouse. He's going into a place where we can get the best performance out of him the next day, and we'll put somebody else out there that might play the position better. It's what all good managers do, and Council is certainly one of those.
Let's go back to the Score listener line, powered by BetQL. Tony is in Milwaukee. Tony, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I love you every morning. I was just going to say, even though Paul stole my thunder a little bit, isn't it going to be hard? I mean, in the aggregate, were we talking about injuries and positions and all this stuff? Do you get in with this team until, assuming everybody gets back on June 1st, maybe mid-June, early July, until everybody, Bruce is exactly right, like rounds into form after injuries and DL stints and warm-ups? So thank you very much, and I'll listen up. Thanks,
Tony. Thanks for the phone call, Bruce. That's why I think the Cubs are treading water. They're two games out. They're 25-20. As long as they can stay there, maybe they feel like they, once they get everybody back, that's when they can start to take off.
David, there's 18 teams in Major League Baseball that are 500 and under. The Cubs are one of five teams in the National League that's over 500, which is incredible considering the injuries they've had and what they've gone through offensively as of late. In baseball, these days, we have what Bud Selig looked for 25 years ago, and that is you have parity, which is another word for, David, what is parity another word for?
Mediocrity?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely. We have, and that is good for the game in some ways. The product, here's the problem before we go to break, and I know we have to go to one. The problem is this. Teams like the Cubs, who have high-paid players and have good players, can't afford, just like most other teams, other than two or three, to build teams the way they have to. Baseball teams have to be built from the back end forward. These days, there's so much money at the top that they can't afford the players at the back end, meaning the strong bullpen closer, the strong two bench guys coming off the bench that are making $7 to $10 million. These teams run out of money in their payrolls long before they can build the teams the way that they did in the past.
Good advice to how to build a baseball team. Good advice maybe for Chris Getz and the White Sox, who lost 4-2 last night to the Yankees in Yankee Stadium out in New York. We'll talk Sox. We're going to have Jordan Leisure in the second hour. But when he come back, we're going to stay with the Cubs conversation. Jameson Taillon, the Cubs starting pitcher, will join us next on Inside the Clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Marcell Ozuna had a single in the center his first time. He swings and misses strike three. Taillon gets his second strikeout.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. Beautiful Saturday morning here at 670 The Score. Inside the Clubhouse, David Haugh, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. Time now to go out to our Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. And that is where we find Cubs veteran right-hander Jameson Taillon. Good morning, Jameson. Thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's great to talk to you. You have been a real, it seems like you're on a bit of a roll. 3-1 start with a 1.61 ERA after starting the season a little bit delayed with the back issue. How is your back feeling these days?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. You know, I had a pretty bad flare up in spring, something I just wasn't used to, and that set me back. And then last week before throwing a bullpen, just had like a tiny little tweak of that, but nothing close to what I felt in spring. So hopefully that's in the rearview mirror, and you know, me and the training staff and strength staff can keep this at bay and you know, do the right warm ups and correctives and all that, just to make sure every time I go out there I'm putting myself in a good position.
I'm going to ask you a question, Jameson. You won't be able to answer it, but I think it's an interesting topic, and that is, why is it so difficult for pitchers to stay healthy these days? The training methods are so great. The individual athletes like yourself train so hard, take such good care of themselves, yet injuries seem to happen, and they seem to linger for people for such a long time. What do you make out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I could try to answer it, but I don't know if we have enough time, but I think it's a lot of things. I think it's obviously more sport specific. You know, at a young age, people are like really focusing on baseball or just focusing on pitching year round. I think that's part of it. I think, like, obviously the obsession with velocity, just throwing a baseball, you know, super hard for a lot of pitches is not a natural movement. You can train all you want, but it's still a very stressful movement on your body. And then I also think, just like with technology and stuff now, you can try to optimize so many things. So like back in the day, guys would just throw bullpens just to make sure they were healthy and touch the slope and, you know, get their work in. And now it's like you can throw bullpens and try to always optimize your arsenal and your biomechanics and the way your body's moving. And, you know, you can look at a guy like yesterday, Paul Skenes, you can look at his splitter. He throws 95 miles an hour, and then you can go in a lab and try to recreate it and look at the grip and the way he throws it and his release axis and all that. So I feel like that's another part of it. Or if you want to be like a high vert, you know, four seam fastball guy, you can literally just go try to optimize everything in the bullpen. So I think that's part of it too. People are just always chasing like the next big thing.
So how does that make you feel about the way starting pitching has changed and maybe the expectations for starting pitchers overall? Nowadays, if you go five innings, then it's considered to be exactly what the manager is asking for, and that's good enough, as opposed to maybe it was when you came in to the majors and maybe even longer ago. Yesterday, Skenes was amazing, dominant, and really nobody batted an eye when he left after six innings without giving up a hit, because that's the way it works these days. How would you describe and how do you feel about the way starting pitching expectations have changed?
Yeah, I mean, I still feel like availability and pitchability and being able to pitch deep into games. Like, I think that's still important. I just think it's harder than ever. You know, lineups are better than ever, deeper than ever. You know, there's data that shows like third time through pitchers just don't have the same results. So I'm kind of in the middle on it. I still think going deep into games helps the team and stuff, but yeah, I mean, teams seem to prefer four or five really good innings over six or seven solid innings. So, but at the end of the day, like, the best guys in the league and the guys who get paid the most and the guys who stick around the longest are the ones who can go deep into games and you know, make their 30 starts a year and all that.
You know, I hate to stay in the subject, but it's such an interesting topic, J-Mo, the idea that people are always trying to max out with velocity. And, you know, again, there's no greater story than yesterday in Skeens throwing 100 and with a four seamer and 96, 97 with a, you know, a hybrid four seamer that he calls, you know, a split four seamer. But when you look at it, just as a baseball fan, as well as somebody that makes their living doing it, you know, it's not sustainable for a long time. And the idea that you have an 8-pound or 10-pound arm going against a 220-pound body in a different direction, doesn't it just seem unrealistic the way baseball asks their pitchers to perform?
Yeah, now? Yeah, maybe a little bit. I think, you know, part of it is that the game is so competitive right now and there's so much talent that, like, I think players feel like if you're not trying to optimize everything and you're not trying to, you know, chase whatever teams value the most, which might be swing and miss or, you know, certain pitch metrics and stuff, like, you're going to fall behind if you're not actively trying to do that. So it's a tough spot to be in for organizations and for players. It's like, you know, you see a guy like Spencer Strider dominating, throwing 97 with, you know, very good basketball metrics up in the zone. And it's like, okay, well, teams love that, so why wouldn't I try to, you know, go watch how he trains or, you know, watch his pitch grips and try to, like, optimize all that. So it's definitely a tricky spot to be in. And if you can't stay healthy, though, then it doesn't really matter what you can do in a bullpen and what you can optimize. So, you know, I don't know what the perfect answer is, but it's definitely one of those things where it seems like everyone's chasing something and, you know, you can't blame guys for doing it. But I unfortunately have been injured in the past. I've had two elbow surgeries. And after my second one, I kind of stripped it down and was like, all right, I need to find a way to stay on the field as much as possible. Like, it doesn't matter if I can throw a 96 mile an hour sinker. Like, if I'm not on the field, it doesn't matter. So, I did a lot of delivery changes after my second elbow surgery just to try to stay on the field. And I had to learn that lesson kind of the hard way.
Talking with Jameson Taillon, the Cubs right-hander here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. So in your role, how much of your time is committed to talking to young pitchers, answering the questions of a Ben Brown, Hayden Wesneski, Jordan Wicks when he comes back, all the guys in the bullpen who may look to you because you're an affable teammate and you're a willing participant? How much of your time is spent being the leader and setting the example and talking to these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're lucky to have a lot of good examples walking around on our team, to be honest. And that's all around the field, not just starters. You know, we have guys all over the field that are really good examples, but I think it's just kind of fluid. It's like, some days we talk a lot. Some days I'll sit on the bench and talk to Wixie, or, you know, I'll talk to Wesley about certain things, or they have great questions. And, you know, other times you kind of need to let them go out and learn on their own and let them just get the reps and the experience and stuff like that. But, you know, our team definitely enjoys talking ball. Like, when we're in the weight room or when we're on the bench, like, we're always talking about, you know, strategy and what we see in hitters and, you know, things we like to do, or, you know, routine things in the weight room, what kind of drills we like to do. So that's just kind of fluid. It's one of those things where it's just like, on all the good teams I've been on, it's like those conversations are just really organic and just kind of happen all day long.
Chet Hoyer and Carter Hawkins have done a terrific job of identifying talent, signing talent like yourself and others, but more importantly, identifying good teammates, good people that fit in with each other. It's interesting to watch in the Cub clubhouse, because there's a lot of those people in there like yourself. So when you watch a Kyle Hendricks, who is one of those supreme people to go along with supreme talents, deal with trying to hang on to helping a team win and holding on to their career at the same time, what goes through your head?
Yeah, I mean, I went through some pretty severe struggles last year, so I think number one is just I can relate. It's a super hard game. You know, I think at some point everyone goes through a really tough stretch in this game. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. We're all rooting each other on, and there's a human element to it. And, like, for me, I see the work a guy like Kyle puts in all day, every day, and how committed he is to his craft. So you never like to see anyone struggle, but especially, you know, just a grade-A human like Kyle. So in saying that, like, no matter what, I'll always bet on Kyle, just the work ethic and the intelligence and the preparation and stuff. It's, you watch him go through his work day, he's one of those guys you'll just bet on to figure it out and find a way. So yeah, it's tough, you know, when you watch people go through struggles. I don't like seeing anyone struggle, even when it's on other teams. Like, I want to beat everyone, but it's like at some point it's just, you know, it's a fraternity and it's a brotherhood, and you don't ever like seeing people really, really struggle.
Jameson, you referenced your struggles last year and this season so far. I know it was a tough night in Atlanta, but overall you have been the pitcher that the Cubs expected you to be, and maybe the guy that you have been throughout most of your career. What's been the biggest difference this season and the reason why you have been more consistent?
Yeah, so I think, you know, coming out of the struggles, I think we identified just some, like, really key delivery cues that keep me on track, just some arm path things and, like, some stride direction things. We figured out some drills that really help with that. And then I think we figured out some pitch package stuff. Like, let's just simplify it a little bit. To righties, we do these things extremely well. To lefties, we do these things extremely well. And then let's just, like, have that as our foundation and not try to do, you know, too many different things and overcomplicate it. So I'd say that's a big one. And then, you know, just the human side of it. Once you struggle being in a new environment and stuff like that, like, it's hard to play catch up all year. And, you know, the confidence goes a little bit. Maybe you're not competing in the strike zone as much as you should, or, you know, you're just hoping you get good results versus expecting it. So I went through a little bit of that last year. And then once you have some success, it's like, okay, I expect these results. I expect to throw this pitch where I want it and get the result that I want. You're not out there hoping. You're just out there executing your pitch and getting results.
J-Mo, it's shocking to me sometimes, and I've watched the game for a long time, how many games are won and lost with plays that are either errors or plays that are not made that should be made. When we've watched your team, when all due respect to the guys who are backups and playing up the middle and doing the best they can, and you don't see the gold glove shortstop and second baseman, is it surprising to you how little people talk about defense, maybe outside of pitchers in the game of baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I think just at this level, like, the difference, the margins for error are so slim. Like, the really good teams and the really bad teams, if you watch them on a consistent basis, might seem really far apart, but like you said, it comes down to a few pitches here and there. It comes down to a few plays, and the really good teams make the plays, and the bad teams might give up free outs or make mistakes while pitching and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, when I came to the big leagues, I thought the biggest jump was going to be like, oh, the hitters or, you know, the fans or whatever. I thought the biggest jump was just how solid the defense was in the big leagues. That shocked me when I came up here for the first time as a rookie, just how clean the defense was all around the field. So, yeah, I mean, just from the pitching side, like, if you can take away hits and just make the routine plays, it makes it hard on the other team. You can kind of suffocate them a little bit. But if on the flip side, I feel like if you give free outs, you just see it so many times at this level. Like, if you give a team free outs, they'll make you pay pretty much every time. So it's like one of those baseball things. Like, you give a team an extra out, they're going to cash in on it. So yeah, defense is huge, and very fortunate to have so many gold labels around the field on this team.
Jameson, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck the rest of the year. Stay healthy, and look forward to talking again.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Thanks, guys.
Jameson Taillon, the Cubs' right-handed starting pitcher. He will go on Sunday, Bruce. Today, The Cubs continue the series against the Pirates. Pregame coverage starts at 12:45 with Pat and Ron on the call. First pitch, 1:20. That'll be Shota Imanaga against Bailey Falter. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. He's as classy as they come, Bruce. You know you're in that clubhouse a lot. It's a guy that's a very good leader, one of many in that Cubs clubhouse.
You know, again, such a good guy. Like, I asked him to come on with us yesterday. He goes, sure, let's do it. What time works for you guys? And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be asking you what time works for you. He goes, no, you know, I got a pretty free morning tomorrow. I'll do some work later in the morning, but what's good for you? So I'm going, okay, 9:30. We'll talk to you then. Should, you know.
Call him back, Bruce. We could do the Yankee years.
I was waiting for him to say, hey, I'll come down to the studio in full uniform, and then I'll take a limo back. He's that type of good
guy. That
would
be great. Wouldn't it be cool to have somebody walking around the ninth floor here in a Cub uniform, and he's not Ronnie Woo-Woo? It's just, that would be awesome.
Doesn't Mitch do that?
No, Mitch, no.
Oh.
Sometimes Ryan Porth will show up in a Reds uniform, but that's that's frowned upon.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, you outed him.
I just did. Did I really say that out loud?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, I'll have to deal with the repercussions later. All right, Bruce, a little bit more Cub talk when we come back. We'll get to the White Sox at the top of the hour. You are listening to Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You know, we'd like to avoid it. But obviously, if it's still lingering, then it's on the table. But we're still trying to avoid it.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine. That was Craig Counsell talking about Nico Hoerner. Bruce, will find out in a little bit whether or not he's in the lineup today. What's your best guess?
Well, first of all, that soundbite sounded like a doctor talking about a disease, right? we're trying to avoid it. Stay away from it. Yeah, we're trying to avoid it. My best guess
What's your second opinion, Dr. Levine?
My second opinion is that Hoerner is back in the lineup today.
Okay.
He was chomping at the bit yesterday on the bench. Talked to him before the game, after the game, very short. He was very busy staying ready. The mentality is, I'm not going on, you know, you're going to have to chop the leg off before I'm going on the IL, okay?
312-644-6767. We'll get to the calls in a second. Bruce, I know that Nico Hoerner is a gamer, but are we really going to give him credit for wearing spikes and a glove while he watches the game?
Yes, because when a guy is injured,
come on,
they're mostly, listen, just listen.
I'm listening.
All right. When a guy's injured, during the game, he's up and back getting treatment, okay? You're not going on the trainer's table in spikes with your glove in one hand and your sunglasses on, you know, getting ready to go in the game. This guy is, you know, in between his treatment is telling the manager, I'm ready to go in, okay? I need it. That's a big deal these days, is that when guys are somewhat hurt and the manager calls your name and you don't have spikes on, he's got to skip over you because you're not ready when needed.
Well, I'm confused then, because earlier in the week, Ian Happ was given an enforced 2-day vacation. Essentially, one of those days, Craig Counsell told him, don't even think about playing. So if he had had his spikes and a glove, he'd have been allowed out of place. Like, what are you doing? Take a mental day off. Go away.
Yeah. Well, when you're told that, that's one thing.
All right.
When you're Nico Hoerner, it's like, I should be in that lineup. I should be hitting right now. And again, Happ is no different, but the Happ situation was predicated on the fact that he wasn't doing the team any good, but he also was in a mode where he wasn't doing himself any good. And that's why he had a timeout, okay? This is the equivalent of a parent saying, you know what, you're hurting yourself as much as us. Go into your room. Stay there, do something fun today, and then come out and be the same old you that we love and need on a daily basis.
All right. I kind of like it. I just think it's gotten a lot of attention, and I find it amusing more than anything. I like
it. It's a thing. Really, wearing your spikes and being ready if you're semi-hurt, it's a big deal. It is for a manager to know that either has this guy to bat or somebody he doesn't want to bat in the ninth inning. It's happened.
Bruce, way back when you were a kid, did you go to games and bring your glove in case you caught a foul ball?
No. No. The odds were stupidly against you, okay?
But you never know.
Even as a kid. Yeah, well, I had good hands. I didn't need the glove. And first of all, yeah. if you're learning how to catch a foul ball at a game, even at 12, I knew and my friends knew, if you go to a game, don't try to catch the ball. Catch the ball after the first guy misses it off of him. It's going to be a lot easier to catch afterwards rather than taking the brunt of it and knowing that the first guy always flubs it anyways.
Words
to live by, David.
Those are words to live by. I just wondered if you ever caught a Gabby Hartnett foul ball, Bruce. That's all. All right. So.
Wow. Yeah, at the Hall of Fame I did.
All right, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about the White Sox when we come back at the top of the hour. 312-644-6767. Have the Sox turned a corner despite last night's loss in New York? How impressed are you, Sox fans, at what they have accomplished since April 26th? We'll talk about it next inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You know, we'd like to avoid it, but obviously if it's still lingering, then it's on the table, but we're still trying to avoid it.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine. That was Craig Counsell talking about Nico Hoerner. Bruce, we'll find out in a little bit whether or not he's in the lineup today. What's your best guess?
Well, first of all, that soundbite sounded like a doctor talking about a disease, right? We're trying to avoid it, stay away from it. Yeah, we're trying to avoid it. My best guess
What's your second opinion, Dr. Levine?
My second opinion is that Hoerner is back in the lineup today.
Okay.
He was chomping at the bit yesterday on the bench. Talked to him before the game, after the game, very short. He was very busy staying ready. The mentality is, I'm not going on. You know, you're going to have to chop the leg off before I'm going on the IL, okay?
312-644-6767. We'll get to the calls in a second. Bruce, I know that Nico Hoerner is a gamer, but are we really going to give him credit for wearing spikes and a glove while he watches the game?
Yes. Because when a guy is injured,
come on,
they're mostly listen. Just listen.
I'm listening.
All right. When a guy's injured during the game, he's up and back getting treatment. Okay, you're not going on the trainer's table in spikes with your glove in one hand and your sunglasses on. You know, getting ready to go in the game. This guy is, you know, in between his treatment, is telling the manager, "I'm ready to go in." Okay. I need it. That's a big deal these days, is that when guys are somewhat hurt and the manager calls your name and you don't have spikes on, he's got to skip over you because you're not ready when needed.
Well, I'm confused then, because earlier in the week, Ian Happ was given an enforced 2-day vacation. Essentially, one of those days, Craig Counsell told him, don't even think about playing. So if he had had his spikes and a glove, he'd have been allowed out of place. Like, what are you doing? Take a mental day off. Go away.
Yeah. Well, when you're told that, that's one thing.
All right.
When you're Nico Hoerner, it's like, I should be in that lineup. I should be hitting right now. And again, Happ is no different, but the Happ situation was predicated on the fact that he wasn't doing the team any good, but he also was in a mode where he wasn't doing himself any good. And that's why he had a timeout, okay? This is the equivalent of a parent saying, you know what, you're hurting yourself as much as us. Go into your room, stay there, do something fun today, and then come out and be the same old you that we love and need on a daily basis.
All right. I kind of like it. I just think it's gotten a lot of attention, and I find it amusing more than anything. I like
it's a thing. Really, wearing your spikes and being ready if you're semi-hurt, it's a big deal. It is for a manager to know that he either has this guy to bat or somebody he doesn't want to bat in the ninth inning. It's happened.
Bruce, way back when you were a kid, did you go to games and bring your glove in case you caught a foul ball?
No. No. The odds were stupidly against you, okay?
But you never know.
Even as a kid, Yeah, well, I had good hands. I didn't need the glove. And first of all, if you're learning how to catch a foul ball at a game, even at 12, I knew and my friends knew, if you go to a game, don't try to catch the ball. Catch the ball after the first guy misses it off of him. It's going to be a lot easier to catch afterwards rather than taking the brunt of it and knowing that the first guy always flubs it anyways.
Words
to live by, David.
Those are words to live by. I just wondered if you ever caught a Gabby Hartnett foul ball, Bruce. That's all. All right. So.
Wow. Yeah, at the Hall of Fame I did.
All right, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about the White Sox when we come back at the top of the hour. 312-644-6767. Have the Sox turned a corner despite last night's loss in New York? How impressed are you, Sox fans, at what they have accomplished since April 26th? We'll talk about it next inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.